Welcome to MGO HockeyCast 1.1. We're sorry we don't have a better name yet. That's still under construction, and hopefully in the next podcast or two, we will have a more interesting name than just HockeyCast. Welcome to MGO HockeyCast 1.1, I guess. We tried this a little bit last year, so maybe that's like the pilot episode. This might be 1.1. I'm David Nasternak. I've been filling in a little bit on the MGO cast podcast and done a few hockey segments here or there, and I brought along my good buddy and answer to all of my hockey questions, Anthony Ciotti. Anthony, how are you doing?
I'm great. How are you? I'm super excited to be doing this.
This could be a good time,
yeah,
I think.
It's going to be fun.
We've kicked it around a little bit, wanting to just kind of talk some Michigan hockey. There's not a ton of that kind of content floating around. So we're like, hey, well, maybe we should give this a go. And we did it as sort of an honor to the team last year because of the run that they put together. And there was a little bit of interest, and we had an interest in also coming back and trying it again, so we might do it a little bit this year too.
Yeah, at the time we were talking about, you know, how the team deserved to have,
right,
you know, a little bit of podcast dedicated to them, and also for the people who were jumping in at the tournament so they could get kind of caught up on the season. They flew under the radar a little bit, partially because they didn't start great, and then, you know, just without a lot of attention on hockey in general, college hockey in general, it was really good for us, we thought, to be able to do that. So it helped, and I mean, we're hoping to do that again this year. The expectations are a little bit higher, and
if I remember correctly from last March, there's another Michigan team that was making a run that was getting a lot of press as well. So sometimes things can kind of slide into the background, and we just wanted to make sure that, you know, people who are interested in Michigan hockey or grew up with it have a chance to know what's going on, because they made the Frozen Four and they were a goal rebound period away from playing in a national championship game, and you know, things kind of went sideways a little bit, but
they were a legitimate top 10 team.
Yeah,
I mean, they proved it in the tournament. They were 8 in the pairwise, and it was really good. That, I mean, I'm really happy we talked about them. It was fun, and they deserved it. I mean, and they're, you know, there's no reason to expect that anything would change moving forward with the coaching staff they have and, you know, the outlook on the program. This is fun to be doing it.
So I've worked at MGO Blog for a few years now, doing a lot of random stuff, and have contributed in a number of ways. But I started following the hockey team closer a few years ago, tracking some advanced stats stuff and just kind of trying to break down why they might be good, or at that time, why not so good. And just kind of wanted to do a little bit more with it, and it's kind of grown a little bit, so I have grown in my knowledge of hockey. And one of the people that has helped me the most is the guy sitting across from me, and this is part of the reason I brought him along on this. But you've been in hockey since you've been a kid, right?
Yeah, I've been following for as long as I can remember.
And you played too?
I played growing up, still do recreationally, and it's just been a hobby of mine. So being able to talk to it, I feel very privileged, especially, you know, a place like this for MGO Blog and for the team. You know, I'm just feel really fortunate to be able to do it. And I enjoyed working with you and, like, you know, on some of the advanced stuff and answering questions. And, you know, it's a really great thing that you've done. And, you know, I think it's just a lot of fun.
Yeah, but a lot of my questions that I had when I was first getting into it, I would come to you and you'd get a text, or I'd give you a call or something, and we'd break something down. And so you've kind of re-gotten back into the game in the last probably 7 or 8 years, started playing a lot locally, getting into contact with a lot of people, and just kind of sort of reintroducing yourself to hockey, I would say, in the last 6-7 years.
Yeah, it's I mean, it's kind of my biggest hobby.
Yeah,
right now. And, you know, so I'm followed a lot, watch a ton of NHL, watch a lot of junior hockey.
Sure.
And
so you're keeping up with it on different levels.
Yeah, I'm an addict, I guess.
Yeah,
you could say.
Yeah.
Is that what you're trying to get me to admit, Dave?
Yeah. Hey, you know, we all have to come to our own conclusions. But I think that what we're kind of trying to establish here is we're not just two rando guys. We've kind of paid attention. We've been involved in Michigan hockey for a number of years, and we're kind of starting to put together more of a concrete program going forward for us being able to distribute some of what we're knowing to people who are interested, I guess, and to a website that prides itself on covering the depths of Michigan sports. And I think that this could be a good addition to some of what MGoBlog is doing in Michigan hockey.
Yeah, I think that, you know, Brian's always been great with encouraging new things, and this opportunity came up, and you know, we're really excited to be doing it, and we'll do the best job we can.
Yeah. So going off of that, obviously in the fall, football takes precedence. That's just kind of the way it is. Everybody knows that. We should be able to potentially do a couple, three more episodes over the next month, 2-3 months or so, with a goal of maybe ramping it up in once the new year starts and everything kind of switches to full-time hockey and basketball. And there's more space on the blog when you're trying to post things. But so we have kind of a loose schedule, but we'll take it as it goes, I guess. If they start 10-0, I'm probably going to be like, hey, Anthony, we better talk about this.
It might creep its way into the MADE podcast.
Right?
So we have one plan for, you know, obviously the one we're doing now to introduce the team in the season. It would be nice if, do one at the end of the non-conference season.
Yeah.
Maybe after football season ends. So that would be, you know, early December where they've gotten into Big Ten play a little bit.
Yep.
And then pick up with like a regular schedule somewhat in the second half of the season when it's more of a focus. The Big Ten is on, you know, and so that's going to be really good hockey. And also, like you were saying, like there's more of attention to hockey and basketball. It's 80 degrees outside today, so it does feel weird talking about hockey right now.
Right.
But I think that, you know, if we can do, you know, 8 or 10 of these and keep everybody up to date on what's going on with the team, and it'll be a lot of fun.
Sure. Yeah. So we touched a little bit on what they did last year. Mm-hmm. And one of the things, unfortunately, in college hockey and college sports is that you're going to lose players every year. And unfortunately for Michigan, they lose not a lot of players by volume, but they certainly lose a lot of statistics and a lot of goals, for that matter. Basically, their entire first line is gone. I think I was reading somewhere that Cooper Marody, who was Quinn Hughes-ish away from being the best player on the team last year, is about to break in with the Oilers.
Yeah, it seems like I think he made the team coming out of camp, which is very good. And it was a good opportunity for him to get traded from Philly to the Oilers,
right?
Because of their situations. But yeah, they lost an NHL forward. Calderon, I think, went and had a little bit of success in the AHL at the end of last season. We'll see how he does. Danks, you know, is going to play in the ECHL. So they lost, lost a good top line. It was as good of a top line as, most good college hockey teams will have. It was 53 goals, I think, accounted for out of the 136 they scored. So, you know, a good chunk of their offensive output last year was from those three guys. They also, off the if you look at like what they played with the final game against Notre Dame, they also lost Nico Pericos.
Right.
So they will have to I think they were going to re-envision that fourth line anyway, but they're going to have to work on that as well. And then losing Sam Piazza, who was their second leading defenseman scorer, will be, another thing they have to address. So they've lost five players off that final game lineup.
Yeah.
And they will have to work to replace those. But obviously the first line is going to be the biggest challenge and probably the topic of some discussion, at least for the first part of the season.
Yes. And I think that we'll get to a lot of this later, but not to spoil too much, but it seems that this might need to be more of a defensive year. They return a lot on defense, including Quinn Hughes, who we will probably talk in a lot more depth. Mm-hmm. But if they can play to those strengths and solidify some of a little shaky goaltending from time to time, there's no reason that this team can't be decent, especially if some of these younger players who kind of had secondary offensive roles last year jump up a little bit and make a leap from year one to year two or year two to year three. There's still enough on this team, I think, and we'll get into that, obviously, in the next couple segments. But I don't think that it's something that's necessarily anything to be too down on, even despite losing what we just talked about.
Definitely agree. They're old on the back end, and they weren't losing anybody off of the top two pairs. So Boca, Hughes, Ciccone, and Luke Martin all return.
Right.
And so that should be very stable for them, and you can get 50, 52 minutes a night out of those guys. and they still have Griffin Luce. So they're really only replacing one regular defenseman.
And they did bring in a few freshmen, mm-hmm. so they'll be able to try out a guy or two here, mm-hmm. depending on, you know, who's hot and who's healthy and all of those things. So
definitely. And I think, you know, they bring back the goaltending as well. They do have a new, I guess we would assume backup right now in Straussman. But, you know, they have basically their entire defensive core is still intact and probably will be built around that for the season, at least the early parts of it, while they're getting the offense settled.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The funny thing that does jump out to me is I feel like you and I at some point had this conversation last year saying the same thing, and then the top line kind of exploded, and all of a sudden, you know, they could score some goals. So that's not obviously off the table. It's just that when you examine the evidence that we have in front of us, it's looking like, from a large point of view, maybe a more defensive team.
Yes, and I think there can be some gains as well from special teams. So they were second from last.
Oh,
I think,
my gosh,
in
the penalty kill.
Last year, and penalty killing. There is room for improvement there, obviously, and that would help them from a defensive standpoint because they are going to have to be more mindful of not allowing goals. And then offensively, they were only 75% on the power play. So if they can get some improvement there, it will help you know, their 5-on-5 play. So if there is some improvement on special teams aside from, you know, the change in personnel, there could be some gains there, kind of offset what they lost from the first line. But losing, what is that, about 40% of your offense? That's quite a bit, and there will be a challenge there. I mean, they do get Lockwood back.
Right.
So it's very good. So that won't be as big of a hurdle to climb because you're essentially replacing two top-line players instead of three. But there's still going to be some growing pains and some challenges, I would believe.
So you know who we are. You know kind of what we're planning on doing. And you know kind of the trajectory of what happened last year. Mm-hmm. So before we get into each of these individual players, let's take a break and we'll come back and look at who is hopefully going to be scoring Michigan's goals this year. Scott Matzka scored 91 points, spent 214 minutes in the sin bin, and won a national championship in his four-year hockey career at Michigan, and spent over a decade as a pro. In 2012, Scott finally hung up his skates to go into the business world. In 2014, however, he noticed stiffening in his fingers, and after a referral to the University of Michigan, he was diagnosed with ALS, a rapidly progressive, invariably fatal neurological disease that attacks the nerve responsible for controlling voluntary muscles. Scott, through his organization My Turn, is using the limited time left to him to help find the cause and a cure for this awful disease. Right now, he is working to raise $7,500 for the ALS Association by October 13th, when he and the rest of the 97-98 team will be in Ann Arbor to celebrate the 20th anniversary of their NCAA hockey championship. He'll be back to team up with Coach Pearson and Michigan on October 26th for a game dedicated to raising awareness for ALS and the University of Michigan ALS Clinic. Visit scottmatzka.com to see how you can help. After a short little break, we thought that we would start by taking a look at what Michigan is returning, and what better place to start than arguably maybe the most important position at center, where you need a strong backbone down the lines of your forwards if you're going to be able to win pucks on the boards and control faceoffs and keep the puck in the zone, that type of thing.
Yeah, everything. Center is a very important position. Michigan's got a good one at the top. We can start with
the former first-round pick, Josh Norris,
Josh
I believe.
Norris,
should
yeah.
probably be their number one center, you would guess.
Traded for Erik Karlsson, which is kind of cool. So, yeah, he's likely going to be their number one center. He, you know, was their shutdown center last year, matchup center, which he was extremely good at. He's good at that on the international level for the World Junior team. He's very effective. So amongst his peers and in college hockey, he's an elite defensive center. So moving into a first-line role will be a little bit of a different story for him.
Yeah.
You know, he'll be asked to drive offense a little bit more, probably won't be taking as many defensive zone faceoffs as he was last year.
And he was their go-to for that, right? Like,
yeah,
they would try to get him on the ice for that.
They leaned heavily on him
right,
for those things, and he was very good at it. So good on the coaching staff for identifying that and utilizing him to his full extent. You know, it's going to be a good opportunity for him to flourish as an offensive player as well. I mean, he's going to have the chance to do that. So I think as a first-line center, he's definitely their highest ceiling center. Their most talented forward overall, I would say.
Okay.
Probably close with Lockwood, but I would give the edge to Norris. And so, you know, being a first-line center as a sophomore and a high draft pick is, you know, a good trajectory for him. And we'll see, you know, how he does with the additional offensive responsibility.
And he did have, like, 23 points.
Mm-hmm.
He had a couple of power play tallies. Mm-hmm. So it's not like he hasn't contributed at all on offense.
Correct. Oh, yeah.
He was in their second line, went through some spurts in the second half of the year where they were as dangerous as that top line. Because I remember a couple stretches where the top line wasn't really, it was more focused on by the other team and wasn't producing like the way they were earlier. Mm-hmm. And the second line with Norris and some of the other guys we'll talk about later kind of picked it up.
I wouldn't take his lull in production because I think he went like 14 or 15 games without a goal at some point. I wouldn't take that lull in production as a negative because he was changing his focus to defense, you know, and that's what he was asked to do. And starting in the defensive zone repeatedly is not a really big recipe for scoring goals. So,
surprise. know,
yeah, but so I don't see that as a negative. I see it as a little bit of an unknown. Like, can he make that next change for, you know, internationally? Like, I watched the World Junior Showcase in the summer. He was still playing the defensive role mostly. And so I think this will be a good, you know, a good way to step up. He did score a lot for the national development team when he was there. I believe he was their leading scorer his draft year, without looking. But so I think he's capable. We'll see if it happens. I think a good winger to have in Lockwood. You know, he's really north south, very speed oriented. You know, drives the net pretty well. So I think that Lockwood might be able to play well off of him. I think that Michael Pastyov will be the other winger on that line. We'll see. You know, he's definitely capable, and I think that if Norris develops the way we think, could drive some offense through that as well. There is a big hole to fill, though. So one of my concerns is that leaving that shutdown center role, which he was extremely effective at, they're most likely going to see a backslide in performance in that role. You know, I don't think they have anyone that could fill that. And so I think as much as trying to fill Marody's spot, they're going to have to try to fill, you know, Norris's spot this year.
As he moves up.
Yes.
Right.
And so that's something that I'm going to be looking for. And I'm not sure 100% who they're going to put in that role. We'll see, you know, as they get into the season, what they're going to do about it. But I think that's definitely a concern. It's probably a concern for them as well.
So the next couple guys we're going to talk about, the other couple centers or guys that could potentially play there based on how the roster and the depth chart would shake out, one of them is Nick Pastyov, who you referenced his younger brother, Michael. Nick is going to be a junior next year in his third year. He played a little bit on the bottom end of his first year, but really took on a different role last year when Michigan's season kind of changed after the GLI. Mm-hmm. And that third line, when they paired Nick and Michael together, threw in overage freshman Josh Becker.
Mm-hmm.
Jack Becker. That line kind of became that third line that Michigan was looking for the first half of the year and is what contributed a little bit to their second half surge. And so Nick is in his third year.
Mm-hmm.
What do you see in him?
I think he's able to step up to the second line role if that's what they need him to do. I'm not sure if it's going to be Jake Slaker in that role or if it will be him. We don't know yet.
Mm-hmm.
He definitely was an effective third line center. That line with the brothers and Jack Becker were, you know, an above average college third line. And I think that really, as you were saying, helped Michigan go into the second half of the season and be a lot stronger. I mean, it drove a lot of their the upward trajectory that they had the second half of the season. You need three good lines, honestly four in a lot of ways, but you can get away with three if the coaches line match well and, you know, you have a lot of roles filled. And I think that Michigan, you know, was very fortunate to have them. Breaking them up will be interesting because we'll see who slots into that left slot if they do keep Nick and Jack Becker together. We'll find out, you know, probably this weekend into next week.
This is a lot of this is just you and I speculating as to what we think could happen, right. but
I definitely think he's capable of stepping into a second line role.
Okay.
We'll see how it goes. And I'm, you know, pretty positive on that.
And he's entering the second half of his career. Mm-hmm. He's been around for a couple of years, played on the lower end. Mm-hmm. And this is traditionally when those types of good college players start to assert themselves and move up into the scoring lines.
Well, the younger guy, the guys who come in when, during their age 18 season versus age 20, you know, they're going to see a little bit more of an upward trajectory as they get older.
Right.
It's the same, you know, same type of gains that you know, you see in basketball with like sophomores and whatnot.
Sure.
Like, it's just the age curve. So the age curve for 18-year-olds is a lot more drastic than people who come in as 20. So I do expect to see, you know, a little bit of improvement. He was 15 points, and I wouldn't be surprised if he gets over 20. You know, we'll see. But I definitely think he's capable, like as I was saying, of driving a second line.
So Michigan's returning goal scorer, or leading goal scorer, I should say, we haven't even mentioned yet, but he was a guy who came in a couple of years ago, and there was not a ton of talent on that 16-17 team, but Jake Slaker was a freshman that year, came in as an overager, I believe, and had a nice year and built upon it nicely last year, paired with Norris, paired with Lockwood 2 years ago, and kind of filled a really interesting role for Michigan from a guy who probably wouldn't necessarily count on to be a driving force, but has sort of, Michigan kind of won the overage lottery with Jake Slaker, I would say.
Yeah, to me, if you look at and we're not, honestly, as Michigan fans, we're not really familiar with the overage game. Like, this
not
is,
as
this
much,
is a
no.
new, this is a new phenomenon for us, let's be honest. But to me, Jake Slaker seems as, like, a best-case scenario for a 20-year-old freshman. He's entering his age 22 season now. And he's been excellent. I mean, he can play both ways. He can score. He's got a good shot. You know, he can move. He's a good enough skater. And I think, and especially for when they picked him up in May right before that season. So he's a super late add to that team. And so, I mean, that is a absolute best case scenario, and he's going to be a quality four-year player. He was good as a freshman, he was good as a sophomore, and he's very diverse. He played on the right side a little bit last year, plays a pretty good center. So I think you know, we're very lucky to have him,
you know,
and I think Michigan, he's done very well for Michigan, and I have no qualms if he has to play second line center. I think that'd be totally fine. They were very, very fortunate to have the top three centers they have. I think, you know, Pastyov or Slaker as second or third line centers, both very good. And you know, I think Michigan's strong in the top three there.
And the last guy that we kind of project onto the center line is Adam Winborg. Mm-hmm. He came in, I think, also 2 years ago. So he's entering his junior year. He was also an overager and came along with, was it Jack LaFontaine? Played with in his junior team, I think.
Same team. Good call. I didn't
even
know that.
And so he's never really been much more than a third or fourth line center, but Michigan doesn't have a lot of centers, especially that are returning. We figure he's probably going to find his way into the lineup, most likely third or fourth line, depending on how things shake out. And he's provided a few goals here or there, but is more kind of a innings eater, so to speak.
Well, I mean, to have a junior who's got 2 years in the program already come in and play fourth line center, I mean, there's many worse things in the world to have to deal with. So I think they're fortunate to have that. Winborg is very good positionally. He plays the game really well. He sees the game very well. And, you know, his production isn't, you know, it's on the line with a bottom six, which is not, you know, it's not a negative. And he's done some effective special teams play as well, from what I recall. So I think having him in the four slot, if that's how he's going to be used, which we don't know yet, but he was last year, so there's no reason to believe he wouldn't be. I think that solidifies a fourth line. And I think, you know, a lot of times last year we felt like he didn't really have an effective fourth line. They were kind of shuffling guys in and out.
Yeah. Well, Perikos would be there.
Right.
And then they'd go to Sanchez or Raby or somebody else. Yeah.
Right. And I think that having Winborg as a fourth line linchpin, that's a good starting spot. Like if they're trying to build a fourth line, you know, you could do far worse than that. I think that, you know, they're fortunate to have him in that role.
So there could be other guys, obviously, that slide in, and we'll mention a couple of them. But that's basically who looks like they would be the main centers on Michigan's team, give or take.
Right, yeah, we're not sure if Slaker will continue to play on the right side. or not, but it seems like that, you know, he can play both.
Those are four decent options.
Yes.
Who've all, at least in their second year, so they've been not only in the program, but they've been in college hockey. They understand the game. They had a tournament run under their belts. So,
yeah, a lot of experience.
Moving outside, where a lot of your goals were probably going to come from one guy individually who had a great freshman year and was doing all right last year and then took a nasty injury, I believe, in
the World Junior
World Juniors
outdoor game.
Yes.
Yeah, so
is Will Lockwood, who everyone is super excited to get back. Like I said, had a phenomenal freshman year on a team that was one of the worst producing in terms of the history of Michigan hockey. We're talking the last 20, 30 years or something. But he was kind of a standout on that team. And he should probably be the number one winger, I would guess, that they would pair on the top line.
Yeah, he's definitely their most talented winger.
Okay.
And coming back, you know, he's almost a he was 2/3 point per game before
yeah.
he got hurt last year. So I think he can definitely, in an added role, get up to a point per game, which would be really good. He definitely has, you know, good skill for the college level, really good speed. You know, definitely great north and south. So I think for a first line wing, that'll get the job done. And we haven't seen him a whole lot, you know, in his career. I think he was hurt a little bit his freshman year as well.
Yeah.
So he's missed a decent amount of time to injury. And if he can stay healthy, that will really help, you know, Michigan. I think they're really counting on him. So, you know, to come back and be strong from this injury.
And then across from him, again, there's a couple guys, but we're thinking probably going to start with Michael Pastujov, Nick's younger brother, who was, I believe, drafted by the Islanders. And he didn't really play the first half of last year, but came on after the GLI, joined his brother on that kind of energy third line that they had, and kind of took off. And he ended up with about 10 points or so on the year, but because he didn't play a whole lot, he still is averaging close to half a point a game for a freshman just getting his feet wet. But this year looks like he has the talent to jump up to that top line, you're thinking?
I think it's definitely possible. And, you know, Warren could be there as well. So
right.
I haven't talked about Brennan Warren yet. But Nick was the draftee from the Islanders.
Oh, Nick
so
was?
Michael was not.
Oh, okay.
But,
I mixed those two up.
They do have, I guess you could call it a pedigree. They were highly regarded as youths coming into Michigan, so age 16, age 17 season. So, you know, the talent is there.
Mm-hmm.
He was a high OHL draft pick,
mm-hmm.
You know, high on the projections when, you know, like I said, during the age 16, 17 years. So definitely has the potential to break out as a sophomore, I would say, considering those factors.
And, like, the guy that you just mentioned that could also be in that spot, Brendan Warren, is the lone senior in the forwards group this year, who's been through a lot with Michigan. He's seen their major run last year, and then the year before was not so much. And they had that, he was, I believe, there on their third line of that Calderon and Marody line when Michigan made that great run with Kyle Connor's group. So he's seen a lot. He came on a little bit scoring last year, mm-hmm. picked it up a little bit, but now he'll be jumping up into probably definitely a top two line role and the lone senior on those top six forwards. What do you think he can bring this year?
Hopefully what he's brought in the past. He had, you know, 15 points last year. If he can continue to contribute pretty well, I think they'll be in good shape. He was a great complement to that, to the lines that you were saying mm-hmm. in the past. And, you know, he's definitely got the capability to put some pucks in the net. And they're going to need it from somewhere, as
yeah.
we were saying. They lost more than 50 goals. So it's probably going to have to come from Warren. Some of it's going to come from Lockwood. You would think from Michael Pastujov as well. So, you know, and maybe even Becker, you know, and putting in a few more goals in front of the net. So those are the areas that we're going to look to see Michigan add some. It might be difficult to replace 50, but I think from a committee standpoint, you know, you chip in a few here, chip in a few there, and you can get close.
So last year, your claim to fame was that you were saying that Dexter Danks was going to have a bit of a breakout season and contribute, and he definitely did. Jumped up to the top line, fit in nicely with Marody and Calderon. Mm-hmm. Is Warren maybe the best shot to fill that, do you see? Because he's pretty much the only sort of senior jump that we could see.
Yeah, but so going in last year, Danks hadn't really shown a whole lot other than just brief flashes.
Yeah.
So, you know, that prediction was kind of a bold prediction, as you'd say. You know, it's kind of bold. I don't see having to make anything like that this year. You know, like Warren's got a history of producing to some extent. And I don't think there's going to be that same level of jump from any one player.
Okay.
This year, I do think it's going to be kind of a committee type thing. I wish there was another way to win another lunch from Brian, but there isn't probably in this group. So
after you get to that point, we're the only guy that left that we really have seen a lot of, and that was mostly in the second half of the year too, is Jack Becker. He was the last guy on that passage of line that kind of broke out. He, another overager, had some nice quote-unquote gritty goals in front of the net, always found himself near the net with those two guys, put away a few, and he'll return for his sophomore year this year. What kind of jump do you expect him to take?
I think his jump came in the second half.
Okay.
So going into the second half, I think he had like one or two goals in January, and he was very productive in the second half. Mm-hmm. I think given his age, the jump's already happened, so I think the productivity is going to be, I wouldn't say flatline, but maybe a steady increase. I don't think there's going to be a huge jump. I think we know what he is at this point. He's very effective around the net. He can score, mm-hmm. you know, especially in those areas. So I think if they continue to use him in that role, be it on the power play or feeding off of a couple good speedy line mates, he can still be very effective. I don't see the same type of jump as I do with like a younger player who came in at 18.
You know?
And I just think that's just the way age curves work. But that's not necessarily a negative, you know. Becker contributed well last year, but I do think we saw his big jump in January last year rather than like in the offseason or whatnot.
And we saw Dakota Raby come in and have a couple flashes last year. Super fast, pretty good on the penalty kill, played on a wing, scored a couple goals, and everyone got pretty excited. He looks like he potentially has a role on this team as like a penalty killer, maybe a fourth line or two.
That's what it seems going in. I do think there's going to be some rotation of some of the other freshmen.
Right.
I don't know if it'll be at Raby's expense or not, but I do think they're going to have other guys come in and take a crack at those roles. I never got the feeling that their fourth line was completely set last year. I mean, I don't think we got that watching it. They didn't play it a ton, and it was more of a special teams type role if you're on that fourth line. I'm guessing they want a little bit more out of it, so whether or not like Raby makes that jump a little bit. He's also older as well.
Yeah.
He does have a lot of value as a speedster. He has scored in his junior league as well, albeit as an overager. So we'll see. We'll see where that fits. You know.
And then the two guys that kind of headline the freshman class in terms of forwards are Nolan Moyle and Jack Randall. Mm-hmm. You have always talked about how you prefer a lot of 18-year-olds to head a class because of that jump that you've mentioned a couple times comes in their college career instead of sometimes before, mm-hmm. when they hit 19, 20, 21 years old. What do you see from Moyle and Randall? We've talked a little bit about potentially them making the fourth or third line, depending on how things shake out, but what do you see from them?
So the reason I think we're talking about them is they're the two that have the highest ceiling. Mm-hmm. Randall was on a lot of draft watches, but he didn't get drafted. If you look at some of the advanced stats, he was a key driver on a lot of his line's activity.
Okay.
So there was you can look it up, it's called betweenness. It has to do with, you know, passing and shot assists and whatnot. And he drove a lot of that. He was one of the leaders, actually, for junior leagues, not just USHL, but some of the other major junior leagues as well. So although his stats weren't jumping off the page, I think he was about two-thirds of a point per game in the USHL last year. As a 17-year-old, that's not bad. And I think given the fact that he contributed a lot to offense driven in his line, he probably will have the highest ceiling of all the freshmen coming in. Moyle's production was very good as well. He is a year older. This is his age 19 season. I think he'll be good as well. He's a right wing. Randall is a left. So we might see them together on a line. I don't know. I do think that they will be quality four-year players. I don't know if they'll be really effective right off the bat. I mean, it might take a little bit of time for them to kind of get up to speed with the college game. But I do think that maybe second half of this season and, you know, for the duration of their careers, we could have, a Calderon or a Warren type where they do light up, you know, the second half of their careers, especially and that's once just, things click.
That's just kind of like what college hockey is that you hope to get some big names, throw them at the top, and then you kind of grow and mature some of these guys that are, they're just college hockey players. And they come up through the system, and then like Tony Calderon, who had a nice freshman year but steadily grew up, and last year was as lethal a power play scorer as Michigan has had in a while, and was putting pucks away, was the captain of the team, and was a legitimate top-line guy. So you have a couple guys here that we think could be that a couple years out.
Yeah, I think as they're recruiting, so the 2020 class is looking really strong. They have a couple guys in 2019 as well. When these guys hit campus, we're going to have an upperclassman in that role to help, you know, help the young stars that they're, you know, starting to recruit. So I think it's a good mix. And I do, like, I think they will probably play the most of any of the freshmen that are coming in. Even though they're the youngest, I think they have the highest ceiling and it's probably the most skill, you know, just looking at the stats. It's hard to say without having watched them.
Yeah. I mean, this is pure speculation.
If you take age into account, they're probably the two best players that are coming in the offensive class.
Before we get to the last few freshmen, we kind of forgot about the transfer that came in last year from Lake State. Luke Morgan was a freshman, played a little bit for the Lakers, and then decided to come join Pearson, had to sit out last year, but this is going to be his first year playing in a couple years, and it seems like there's a bit of a buzz around the program about him. What have you heard about that?
There seems to be a little bit of buzz about him. They might get some goals out of him as well, is what it seems. He came into Lake Superior State as a 19-year-old freshman, was their seventh leading scorer, I believe, had seven goals for them, and then, you know, transferred down to Ann Arbor when Mel came. He's originally from Brighton.
Mm-hmm.
Came up through the Honey Bake program. And so I think that he's another guy who will probably see regular lineup time. And he's a left wing, so that might solve some of the problems on the left side, you know, the openings there.
Yeah.
I'm glad we talked about him before we get to the rest of the freshmen, because I do think that Moyle, Randall, and Morgan and Lockwood are going to be the four forwards that replace what was lost last year, if I had to guess.
Okay. No, that's good. So then the last three guys, Van Wee, Olmstead, and Lambert, are it's a large forward class when you don't lose quite that many people,
right,
and they seem to be over-replacing to a little bit. Do you see anything in those three guys that could crack the lineup, and if so, in what way?
I think what they're trying to do is build a good fourth line or have a good rotation and make it very competitive for the bottom six.
Like pushing each
right.
other so
yeah.
that you don't that your spot isn't mm-hmm. solidified.
I don't see anything from the stats that would indicate a high ceiling on anybody. But like I said, if you're able to have, you know, really good practices with, you know, decently skilled players and being able to push people on a daily basis, this is the largest team they've had in a very long time. I think there's like something like 27 players.
Yeah.
Which is very unusual. I mean, it's 10 walk-ons, essentially.
Okay.
And so, you know, they're going to have – it's going to look a little bit different. There might be guys rotating in and out on some of those spots in the fourth line earlier in the season until it gets settled. But, yeah, they are going to have a lot of those overagers coming in and kind of filling in the bottom of the lineup.
Which is not a bad thing when you're looking for the back end, because you're just looking for guys who have some experience and can mm-hmm. do their job, and you're not looking for somebody who's going to go be an elite goal scorer.
Right.
You're looking for a guy who's going to know his assignment mm-hmm. and not give up an odd man rush or take a dumb penalty, things like that.
And you never know what's going to happen 2, 3, 4 years down the road. So a couple of these guys might end up being really good upperclassmen, pairing them with some of the young guys that they have coming in,
right,
you know, in a couple of years. So I think some of these guys they're looking at for, you know, a few years. They're going to lose some guys next year. They're recruiting this year. I think they were able to bring in these guys now. They didn't have a lot of forwards to bring in. And so I think this is a good opportunity to kind of fill in a bottom six right now and see what happens. You know, it's taking a lot of flyers, but it's a good strategy, right? It's like having a large walk-on program, essentially. And you're going to get probably a couple players out of the group that they're bringing in. And that's a good thing.
So that's a lot of names. It's a lot of new names.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to take a break and come back and talk about some names that you're probably a little more familiar with. one of the most heralded freshmen in recent memory and maybe in long-term memory has decided to return for his sophomore season, and that would, of course, be Quinn Hughes, who at a certain point graced our site banner as a semi-robot, and that's kind of what he looked like when he was on the ice, because when he'd get the puck, he would just... It almost kind of like when you'd have like a big hitter walk up to the plate, or you'd have like a major basketball player in an ISO situation. It was just like when he had the puck, it was something that you almost could not turn away, and you almost anything could happen from, especially in terms of going forward and creating something.
It was amazing having him on the team last year. Michigan is very fortunate to have him back. He's probably the biggest key to any of their success this year. Honestly, like the team's going to be built around him, and yeah, Quinn Hughes is amazing. We're very, very lucky to have him. He was a top 10 pick in the draft. I believe he went seventh overall to Vancouver. He's probably out after this year, we would assume, and he's probably going to be playing for Vancouver the minute Michigan season is over. And you know, we should just enjoy it while we can. It's a definitely a very unique player. You know, amazing skater, great on his edges, really, really great stick handling with the puck. Very good at defensive positioning and being able to leverage his small body and able to take puck off people. So, yeah, I'm really, really looking forward to having one more year. Quinn Hughes, we are very fortunate to have that. So and he is going to be the straw that stirs Michigan's drink every night, basically.
Yeah, and I was going to say, like, we almost could have talked about him in the previous section because he is Michigan's returning leading scorer. Mm-hmm. He averaged about over... 3/4 of a point a game, and he really picked it up down the stretch when they needed it, and had a couple of goals. I remember in that game against Ohio State in Columbus, hit the post, I think, once, could have won that game.
Yes.
And it changes everything when he's on the ice. Mm-hmm. It almost becomes like they have four forwards.
Yeah, he's definitely a very modern defenseman in that sense. He's great with the puck, great breaking it out, great at getting it into the zone. Great at making things happen in the zone. Great on the power play. There's really no weak spot to his game, to be honest with you. Even defensively, you know, you see some of these guys that are really puck dominant can be bad defensively. But you know, once he really kind of applied himself in the second half of the year after the World Junior Championship, he was outstanding in all phases of the game. Got asked to play for the United States at the World Championships. Played a third pair role there. For Jeff Blashill, did pretty well, you know, in limited opportunities. Mm-hmm. They didn't put him in any bad spots, honestly. Like, he, you know, they sheltered him really well, and he, you know, he did his job. Looked pretty good in the summer showcase for Team USA, where he's, you know, definitely one of their two main defensemen on that team. And, you know, he looked great, played very well. You know, the only concern with someone who's so puck dominant is if you lose the puck, you're usually the last man back, but that's just kind of how it goes, and that's what's accepted. I mean, Erik Karlsson's the same way. Like, it's just that's what it is, and that's the drawback to having a great puck carrier back there. And so I think that we're expecting a really great year. If he has the year everyone's expecting, that, you know, Michigan will still be able to maintain or at least get close to the level they were at last year. He's going to be a big part of that. Like, this is going to be all about Quinn Hughes.
So this is kind of, in a sort of way, like getting Trey Burke back for that second year?
Yeah, I mean, hockey is a little bit different than basketball, like,
sure,
cross-sport comparison, because he can only play half the game, you know, at most.
Yeah.
Like, a really great defenseman is going to top out at, like, 32 minutes a game, and that's really ambitious anyway. So he can play probably half the game. They're going to have to find ice time for somebody else the other half. But it is a lot like that, where, you know, the guy who has no business playing college or juniors, like, he should be playing in at least the AHL. We are fortunate to have, you know, him in college hockey and playing for Michigan.
Yeah,
you know?
That kind of level, though,
right,
is just kind of where it could take Michigan to a level that maybe it's above what the rest of their team is at.
Oh,
he could drag them
100%. If you replace him with an average defenseman, this team is probably in the mid-20s in pairwise. Let's be honest.
And, that's how good he has the potential to be.
I mean, we looked at it last year when we were talking, and, you know, we said Wisconsin was basically Michigan without Quinn Hughes, right? Like,
okay,
that's the comparison we made last year. In a lot of ways, that holds true. And it's not a knock on the rest of the team, but I mean, this is how teams are built, and, you know, and he's a great player, and he's going to lift them. And, you know, and like I said, he's going to look like a ringer out there most nights because he probably is way too good for college.
Probably is a ringer out there. Yeah. Well, that's going to certainly be fun to watch. But back on the defense with him are guys that are entering their senior year. Mm-hmm. One was drafted by the Stars, mm-hmm. I believe, Joe Ciccone, who also kind of had a little bit of a flirting with the NHL, mm-hmm. right?
From what I understand, I'm not too familiar with that, but I mean, he's a great upper-class defenseman. He did very well paired with Quinn Hughes. There's a lot of responsibility when you're paired with a puck-dominant sure. defenseman like that. And he can be rangy. Like, you have to be able to cover a lot more of the ice when your partner is rushing it up so much. And, you know, Ciccone has matured very well. He made the World Junior team when he was a sophomore and, you know, honestly was started as a seventh defenseman for them and worked his way up into the second pair for the medal round and played a really good role. And so if you look at like what he's done in his Michigan career, he's progressed at a good trajectory, been very reliable, and you know you don't really think about him too much during the game, which for a defenseman of his skill set is what you want. You don't want to be thinking about those kind of defensemen. He's there, he's steady, and he plays a very good role paired with Quinn Hughes, which is a difficult thing.
Brian would call him a boring safety.
100%. Yeah, you can't. I mean, not every defenseman is going to be Quinn Hughes. Like the
right.
you can't have those guys. So having a guy who can complement him in the back end is very important. And he's done a really great job. And we probably should expect that it'll be much of the same this year. And it's a great first pairing. I mean, you're not really going to see many better first pairs in college hockey. And so Michigan's very fortunate there.
The other senior defenseman, Nick Boca, mm-hmm. also been around a while, seen him go through a number of changes, takes a lot of shots, will come in maybe a bit more offensive, I would say, mm-hmm. than his senior partner in Ciccone. Mm-hmm. But Nick Boca back, and that's at least three good defensemen that they're going to have. What do you see Boca potentially becoming this year?
I think a lot of the same. He didn't score a lot, so it's potentially there's some potential for him to score a little bit more. Although without anybody else moving out on the top line, it's probably a little bit limited. He does move the puck very well, so I don't think his point totals really match his puck moving ability. I think he's really good at breaking the puck out. He's really good at handling the puck in his own zone and relieving pressure. And they missed that. You know, that game he missed in the Wisconsin series, they were hammered.
Yes.
You know, they got straight up dominated without him on the ice in that second pair. So I think it showed a little bit of his value there. And for having a senior of his caliber, you know, he was drafted as well. There's some talent there. And, you know, he's definitely going to play professional hockey, same with Ciccone. So, I mean, they are going to lose three defensemen after this year to the pros, which yeah. is a good problem to have in a lot of ways. And it speaks to, the caliber of talent on this defense.
Probably defensive number four on this team is Luke Martin, who mm-hmm. was also drafted, I believe, by Carolina.
Second round Carolina.
And he's shown some flashes here or there, had a couple missteps in his first year, mm-hmm. and was paired, I believe, with Hughes for a time mm-hmm. last year, but also had some positive gains. Not a ton of scoring, but you could see him mature on the defensive end a little bit.
Yeah, he has some upside. You know, the getting drafted that high means you have some upside. So I think there's a potential that he could have developed a little bit more in the offseason. We'll see when the season starts. But he paired very well with Boca. Is very serviceable on the second pair. And, rounds out a really formidable top four, quite honestly. So they don't have quite the offense that some teams might have in their top four. You know, like when we saw Boston University last year.
Yeah,
that was a really, really good offensive top four. So they might not top out at something like that, but it's going to be a very steady top four that you can build a really fundamentally sound defense around, especially if you have good commitments from forward and a good system.
Yeah, and that fits well, and we can even talk about this a little bit in our last segment, but fits well with guys like Josh Norris, who are really good defensively. Mm-hmm. So if you can play to those strengths of having a lot of good defensemen and having good defensive forwards and you set your systems right, there's no reason that you can't keep a lot of pucks out of the net.
Definitely. Yeah.
So transitioning to the last potential line, mm-hmm. First guy is probably Griffin Luce. He has the most experience of anybody that's left over on the defensive side of the roster. And he doesn't score a lot, but he definitely is a big body and plays. There's certainly a role for him to play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he moved up and played second pair in the tournament last year, if you remember.
Yes.
So he was paired with Boca, whereas Luke Martin was on the third pair. I don't know what they're planning on doing this year. I think there was more success with Boca and Martin together on the second pair. But we will see. There is an opening on that third pair besides mm-hmm. Griffin Luce. They have three freshmen coming in mm-hmm. as well. So, I mean, we can take a look at them. Yeah. The youngest who was brought in is Jack Summers, playing his age 19 season for Michigan here. He scored a decent amount for Tri-City in the USHL. I think he's familiar with Bill McColt.
Okay.
From his time there. Should project to be a pretty decent four-year player, I would think, based on, you know, his pedigree. And then there's a couple other overagers they're bringing in. One is Jake Gingell. Gingell?
So not Jason Gingell, who was the Michigan kicker, but right. Jake Gingell.
Yes. He had a good USHL career, solid with Oha and Youngstown. Not a big scorer, so we'll see. He's already 21 as well, so there's probably not a ton of upside on that. But, you know, if he comes in and solidifies the back end and is good injury fill-in or a seventh defenseman, maybe even takes that sixth spot early in the season while Summers is getting kind of acclimated to college hockey, I think that's a good addition. Allow me to correct myself. The third defenseman we were talking about was Christian Mikey, who didn't play at all last year, so that's why he seems like a new player.
Right.
I played six games for Michigan the year before. I had come from the USHL a few years there, so there was potential maybe for a seventh slash sixth defenseman spot for him to take. So I think it's going to be between those three guys, obviously. That's what those spots on the roster look like for taking that sixth defenseman.
All right, so that'll sum up the defense. Next, we're going to look at a couple of goalies. Michigan weirdly lost Jack LaFontaine. He went back to another junior club, and so now Michigan is left with Hayden Levine, who looks probably like the starter. Mm-hmm. He played most of the second half of last year because he got pretty hot in a couple games, looked pretty good, had a couple of shaky games and a couple of shaky moments, but had a pretty good second of the half of the year and was in net pretty much for their entire tournament run.
Yeah, so he's pretty good, consistent goalie. They know what they're going to get with him. He doesn't have a lot of bad starts, so you're getting a pretty decent floor. Mm-hmm. It's easy to kind of project a game plan around a goalie who's fairly consistent, mm-hmm. at least with the floor. So, you know, Levine's been good for them for a couple years now. And won the spot, rightfully so, from Jack LaFontaine. As you were saying, he went out to the BCHL to play this year, maybe earn a scholarship back somewhere else or at Michigan again. And we'll see what happens with that. But they are bringing in another goalie who had a really excellent year in the USHL. Strauss Mann is his name. He was, I think, third team All-USHL last year. Hmm. Had a great save percentage. Had a pretty good career, I think, in New England prep school, if I'm not mistaken. So he should come in and be able to be competent at the college level right away, I'm guessing. You know, and he's a little bit older as well, so, you know, there's going to be an experience factor and a maturity there that might help them from a backup spot. Honestly, he does have, you know, a good enough last couple of years from a production standpoint where I wouldn't be surprised if he's able to handle the starter role if something happens with Levine.
Okay.
So without having seen him play, it seems like they have a guy who could possibly, you know, blossom into a starter, which is what you need. You know, they lost that with LaFontaine, and they're gaining another capable goalie. So goaltending, as you were saying, you know, from the high end, it wasn't as consistent as you'd want. You know, it's not an elite position at Michigan, but
like a game stealer,
right? Yeah, but you're going to have some solid performances, mm-hmm. Probably not giving away a lot of goals. And if you're building a defensive team with, you know, four quality defensemen and a commitment to defense from a system standpoint, you know, a lot of times the coaches will look for having a high floor rather than a high ceiling because you're able to, you know, keep that consistency. And I think that's what Levine brings them. And there's no reason to expect that, you know, it's going to be any different. You know, I don't think we're going to see him improve maybe a whole lot. You know, he's older, so you know, the curve is a little bit different. But
sure.
I do think that, you know, what he gave Michigan last year is definitely, you know, they got to the Frozen Four with him, and you know, they can definitely win, you know, four games in March with him as well. So you know, I think that they're in good shape with goaltending.
And in addition to that, from a roster management standpoint, instead of having two goalies that are the exact same year, now they have a goalie that is offset by a couple years, which is helpful when you're recruiting other ones because you're not kind of having a lot of guys at the same year and then having nobody. And then in this case, now you have them 2 years off, which is, I think, kind of ideal.
That is true, unless you have a really elite guy coming in 2 years from now. And I had not thought of that. That's a really good point. So they don't have to take that risk. You know, they had that with Billy Sauer 1 year. So
right.
He came in as a freshman. He was the youngest player in college hockey.
Right.
And it was a very difficult transition from him. You know, and they did it with Turco, I think, from Shields, and maybe even Blackburn from Turco. So historically, Michigan's done that with goaltenders where they'll cycle one out and bring a big-time recruit in. That's not really how it works anymore. There aren't a ton of high-end goalies going the college route these days, and to be able to bet on that for 2 years from now would be a really difficult bet for Michigan. So Strauss Mann is going to help bridge that gap. Maybe he will be the starter in 2 years. Maybe they will have someone else in 2 years, but it's going to really make that transition easier. And you're really minimizing the chance that they have just a disaster of a year from a goaltending perspective at any point.
So it does look like a defensive team overall. We talked about how a couple of their forwards are pretty defensive, especially at the center position, and their defense looks pretty strong because you have four drafted really good defensemen, one super high end, obviously, that right. will contribute on the offensive end too. And then you have two solid goaltenders, maybe no one of the super elite level, but two guys that look like they're ready to contribute and hold down a defensive team and potentially to make a run. So we will take a look at the beginning part of Michigan's schedule and maybe throw around a couple predictions for our last little bit of segment.
Let's do it.
Sound good? Glancing at Michigan's schedule, they start on Saturday, which is the reason for this podcast being done today, Wednesday night, and posted hopefully soon after, is they open weirdly against Vermont, who they played twice last year and beat, if I remember correctly. So they play them again on Saturday, and then they also have an exhibition Sunday afternoon.
Yes, against the University of Waterloo. So starting on Saturday with Vermont, they were 48th last year in pairwise. It should be a good kind of kickoff for Michigan breaking in this new lineup.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be a good first weekend for them. You know, the Canadian team is probably going to be as bad as we've ever seen a Canadian team come in.
Oof.
I looked at their roster. They're basically not even trying.
Are we allowed to say that? I think we can say that.
I can
Brian
say that.
Brian said worse, so
I can say that. That if you look at a lot of the teams east of Toronto actually have a lot of good former Canadian junior players on their
okay.
team. And some of those teams, especially up in Ottawa or Quebec, will go down and beat some of the teams on the East Coast. So I know like Boston College and Boston University get taken to the brink by some of those teams up there.
Oh,
being in Western Ontario is a different story, though.
Okay.
it's a different level of competition, and Michigan will probably – do they still give away tacos for 10 goals or pizzas or whatever? Because like that's on the table for this weekend, and you
so
know,
if you're looking for a free meal,
yeah.
maybe show up at Yost on Sunday.
I don't know. Do they still do that?
I don't
know. So the first weekend will be really good for breaking in players and having Mel see what they have. So
okay.
I think the schedule lines up well for that. Now, the next weekend will be really interesting because they have that Friday game against the national team.
Right, they play every year.
Which is amazing because this year's national team is loaded. They have 10 guys projected for the first round of the NHL draft.
Wow.
John Beecher, who is Michigan's lone recruit off that team, I believe, is a projected first rounder and plays on their third line. If that gives you any indication of how good they are, you're going to get to see Jack Hughes. They're going to be
I don't want to talk
loaded.
About Jack Hughes.
It's going to be a really great time probably the first national team game I've looked forward to since the Eichel and Larkin years.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's going to be great. But, you know, one of the things that we haven't – that the schedule gives us a benefit of is it gives them 2 full weeks' worth of practice additionally to get prepared for Western Michigan, which will be their first real test of the season. So,
yeah.
You know, Vermont is not to be slept on. I mean, they did finish pretty low in the pairwise, but, you know, they still are a Hockey East team.
Sure.
But it gives them 3 good games for a tune-up and also all that additional practice time. They go into Western, home on Friday the 19th. Western was 25th last year. They do have Matthias Samuelson, who was a Michigan commit.
Right.
Decommitted to go to Western. They do have some talent. They have a very good coach. I think they're projected to finish 4th in the NCHC, which is a power conference. So it will be a formidable opponent, and they do a home-and-home with them.
And they were in it last year until probably the very end, where I remember writing about them a little bit as being on the bubble of the NCAA tournament. So this is not like the old Western team. This is kind of the Western team that has crept up in the last 5 or 6 years of where they would make an NCHC run and potentially crack in the NCAA tournament.
Yes, and they do have a draft pick, if I'm not mistaken, a couple of them, a world junior player as well, or at least from the summer camp. So there will be some talent out there. It will be a good game. And like I said, you know, Andy Murray's a good coach, very accomplished. That's a good, you know, it's a good team to play. And I frankly kind of miss playing them.
Yeah.
You know, not being in the CCHA anymore. So it's pretty exciting.
And I've been out there a couple of different times because it's only about an hour and a half
90 minutes
west
from
of here.
Yeah.
And Lawson gets kind of loud and it's a fun little environment. And so Michigan will be there on Saturday. They'll be at Yost on the Friday game on the 19th. So
yes.
And then that's a couple weeks later, they have another old foe that we used to see all the time from the CCHA. I'm not sure if we'll get to see them because it is in Lake State, and sometimes those games are not always readily available. But Michigan does get a chance to play another Michigan team in Lake State.
Yeah, they do. Are we skipping St. Lawrence entirely? I mean, they did finish 58th.
Oh, yeah.
They finished 58th or 59th last year in pairwise.
I guess.
Oh, 59th. I guess 59th? We should skip them.
Yeah. I'm assuming Alaska Anchorage was behind them.
Yes. So.
I need a new hobby if I can tell you who the two worst teams in college hockey are.
Well,
but anyway.
Lake Superior is not much higher, but they are, you know, a local team. Michigan did play them every year at the Joe as part of the deal that Illich sprung with the Lake Superior University to redo the arena.
Oh, yeah. That was quite a while
so
ago.
So we missed that, though. They were up there a few years ago, I think the Truba and Merrill year.
Uh-huh.
They had a road trip up there. It was the last time Michigan's been there.
Yeah, you went up and live tweeted a game, didn't you?
I did, yes. And so it's a really great trip. If you can get up there, it's fun. It's totally worthwhile. Sault Ste. Marie is a nice little town for the weekend. And that will be a nice trip, you know, just playing a Michigan team again. They are not in good shape. You know, they were 56th last year. 59th for St. Lawrence, so they will have two weekends against bottom feeders of the NCAA, but this sets up nicely for, you know, moving into the Big Ten portion of the schedule after Lake State. They basically get six extra weeks, you know, prepare with that Western Michigan series in there before they play Notre Dame November 9th. So it's a lot of extra prep time. I mean, they're definitely not going to be taking these games lightly. Mel Pearson's not that kind of coach.
Sure.
It's not that kind of program, but, you know, it does provide them with a lot of evaluation time and a lot of prep time. The downside is you can't really lose these games.
Yeah.
You know, the way that pairwise works. But, I mean, it's going to be the type of games where Michigan's going to be able to get real evaluations and you know, with a little bit of margin for error, I would say, you know, to be polite.
You know who's probably really excited for that Lake State series?
Who is that?
Luke Morgan.
Yes, it is a revenge series.
So for someone, we're not sure who.
The revenge game Twitter feed could put him in there for that game. Yeah, but it'll
be fun for him. Mm-hmm. I'm sure he's going to be jacked up for it. He'll tell everybody else on the team, and it's always good to play teams in Michigan. Brian has talked a number of times about doing a Michigan Cup and getting all the local teams because that was kind of like the saving grace to the CCHA when you play teams that probably weren't going to make the tournament, but you get to play against people you grew up with and were probably recruited against and all that type of stuff, and then kind of turning it into sort of a local flavor. And while they haven't done that, that's something that MGoBlog has sort of pushed a little bit. Michigan is getting to play a few of these teams, and in addition to Michigan Tech, like always, in the GLI. So there is a little bit of Michigan flavor, state of Michigan flavor, to this non-conference schedule.
I think it's good. I miss the CCHA. I would wish we could go back to the CCHA. And so I'm glad we get a little bit of a taste of the CCHA before we get into the Big Ten. Now, the Big Ten is going to be an excellent conference this year.
Yeah.
Probably the best in the country. It's probably a little bit better.
Top to bottom.
Yes. Probably top to bottom better than the Hockey East. Now, the Hockey East has more teams, so it's a little bit of an unfair comparison, but it is a loaded conference. So Michigan taking it light on the non-conference schedule, and they do play Merrimack once in January. Merrimack was also a bad Hockey East
on
team.
On like a Tuesday.
Yeah.
Of course.
You know, so they do have one more you know, non-conference game in the second half of the season. But it is taking a light non-conference approach makes a lot of sense for the way that their conference schedule is going to go. It is a loaded conference. Three of the four Frozen Four teams last year were from the Big Ten.
Right.
Notre Dame and Ohio State, you know, were there. Notre Dame played for the national title, obviously.
Right.
Ohio State was beaten by Duluth. I don't see a lot of backslide from those two teams. They might have lost some guys, but they're also, you know, very, very steady programs at this point with excellent coaches.
Yeah.
Did not lose their goaltenders, which is probably
the
biggest thing.
And those are two of the better goaltenders in the country.
Yes. So having to play eight games against those goalies is not going to be the greatest experience. But, you know, it just kind of speaks to the volume of the quality in the conference. And then if you look at Minnesota, they were a little bit of a floundering Enterprise the last few years. I don't really think their coaching was the strongest under right. Lucia. And I think things grew a little bit. It grew a little bit stale. So they bring in Bob Motzko from St. Cloud State, who he has built into a top five team. They're a preseason top five. He is leaving to go back to Minnesota, where he was an assistant coach.
Okay.
He was excellent for the USA at the World Juniors. That's my familiarity with him. He coached right. there for 2 years. A very strong tournament coach. If you look at the way he's built the St. Cloud program, very
and
good.
St. Cloud hadn't made a tournament for like 2008, and now they're kind of a perennial top 10 team.
Yeah, it's not the easiest. I mean, if you think about Minnesota being so loaded with talent, it's not the easiest place to recruit to. It's 2 hours outside of the Twin Cities, right. in the middle of nowhere, 20 minutes off the freeway. I mean, it's not the easiest place. They have had good players, but there's not like a really big history of success. You know, in the breakup of the WCHA, or the CC, or, yeah, sorry, the WCHA, and, you know, the way that, you know, joining the NCHC, you know, he's done a good job with them. And, you know, moving back to Minnesota, I would expect Minnesota to be much better, even without bringing new talent. I mean, they do lose Mittelstadt. We'll get into the deep dive of the rosters going into, you know, one of our future podcasts before the conference season starts.
Right.
But I do expect Minnesota to be better. I also expect Wisconsin to be a lot better. This would be Tony Granato's third season there. And although they have lost their two centers over the last couple of years, Kunin leaving last year,
Frederick
leaving the year before, I believe. They do have some good recruits coming in, and they had a lot of guys with good pedigrees, like mid-round picks, who are maturing now. So
right, because they're becoming upperclassmen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they brought in Kondre Miller, who was a first-round draft pick on defense, and they have some other guys coming in, you know, in the top 100, I believe, draft picks. But they also have an existing set of good young talent that they've brought in. So I would expect them to jump up from where they were last year, which was 26th, right behind Western Michigan. It would be really shocking to me if they didn't finish in the top 20 or at least even, you know, flirt with the tournament. They might have a little bit of goaltending to attend to. You know, Barry was a little bit inconsistent, but they do have some – they have a lot of pieces there. And the coaching staff is outstanding.
Minnesota, they always do. Mm-hmm. A team that might take a bit of a step back, if there is one, mm-hmm. potentially, would be Penn State, you think?
Yeah, they did lose a couple guys, as we were discussing, a couple guys to the pros.
Late.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
late after the season. I don't know what they're really bringing in. I think if there is a candidate for a little bit of a backslide in the conference, it would probably be Penn State to me. And so, you know, they have their own challenges. Being kind of in the middle of nowhere in Pennsylvania is proving to be a little bit of a difficult place to recruit. They lost one of their big recruits, Jake Goldowski, to Saginaw Spirit last year. They've lost the best recruit in their history recently, signed with an OHL team, and then a future goaltender just signed with an OHL team as well. So they do have good – they do have some good players. I mean, they had a few and then I think drafted in the 90s on their team last year. And they are able to produce pro players, you know, as we just kind of discussed.
Guys are signing contracts.
Right, exactly. And the coach is an outstanding coach. And, you know, they shoot a lot. They play a very smart game from an analytical standpoint. But I do think if it's completely possible, they take a little bit of a step back. I mean, they did finish 11th in the tournament.
Sure.
So, you know, it's possible they make the tournament again. But if I had to pick one candidate for a little bit of a step back in the conference, it would probably be Penn State.
Yeah, and if for no other reason, then it looks like everybody else is stepping forward. And even Michigan State they were a much different team last year than they were the year before. And while they weren't, say, good last year, they were pushing top half of college hockey.
Yeah.
And to be the seventh team and the last team in the Big Ten and you're still in the top half, I mean, that's where do you find easy winnable games? Like, there aren't any. Like, anybody in that you play in the Big Ten now, it's going to be a battle.
Yeah, I don't think Michigan State's going to be a walkover. I don't think they entirely were last year. I mean, they did have a couple good games against Michigan.
They had a great top line.
And they're going to be good again this year. They do have a couple decent recruits coming in. They're bringing in the national team's goalie.
Okay.
So there will be some good pieces. I know for a fact that the people up there really like Danton Cole, so he's united the program, you know, as you need.
Which they needed after the last, like, 10 years.
Yeah, they had a really – if people seem to forget, Michigan State was on Michigan's level in a lot of ways throughout the 90s and early 2000s. And if you look at early part of the 2000s, they had a lot of really quality NHL players.
Yeah.
Even more so than Michigan in a few years.
Yeah.
You know, so they were on Michigan's level for the longest time. And they had a backslide. You know, they went with Rick Comley He did win them a national title, but it wasn't, you know, it's kind of taken them into, you know, started on a backslide, and then hiring Tom Anastas, you know, was the jump off the cliff that, you know.
A decision.
And it was fun for a few years as a Michigan fan watching them be really terrible, but at the same time, it is a little bit frustrating, you know, not having that rivalry anymore.
And yeah, because so, that used to be an awesome rivalry.
It was amazing, yes.
I mean, Yost would be full, mm-hmm. and Munn, we've been yeah. up to Munn for a few different mm-hmm. games, and those games are, and even when we still play State up there, like, Michigan doesn't walk over them. They right. always are up for the Michigan game, pretty much in any sport, it seems. But, mm-hmm. like, so now... So even with well, go ahead.
I was going to say I think they're starting to level out. They had a little bit of turmoil last year. I know Mitchell Elliott left mm-hmm. midseason to go play in Sarnia in the OHL, and but they still have a few good players. But I do think that, you know, Cole's kind of gotten a grasp on the culture, was obviously really bad, you know, they're bringing in some decent players. He had his connections with the development team. I think that's why they're able to get a couple of those guys. And I do think, you know, they finished 35th last year, which is, for the worst team in the conference, being 35th in pairwise is pretty solid.
Yeah.
It speaks to a level of the conference that's very good. And I would not be surprised if they finished in, you know, around 25 this year. They could jump 10 spots, especially with the second-year bump that you might see from a coach like that, kind of cleaning out some of the cobwebs and moving forward. You know, Cole's an established coach. And we might be headed back to a pretty solid rivalry with Michigan State, which will be fun.
So the Big Ten looks loaded, and we'll discuss that schedule at another time in terms of timing of games and all that. But where can Michigan win the Big Ten? Can they finish in the top three? Are they going to be towards the bottom end? Like, what do you see Michigan doing in the Big Ten this year?
So they were picked to finish second.
Okay.
I think preseason, right behind, was it Notre Dame? I don't quite remember what was recent.
Sure.
I mean, I think that... given Wisconsin and Minnesota's impending rise, it will be a challenge to, I think, win the conference, especially with Ohio State and Notre Dame's sustained quality. I do think it's possible. I mean, it's only 24 games. It's an incredibly small sample size
sure.
in college hockey. And, you know, obviously, if you're talking about the regular season title, I do think it's a possibility. I mean, tournament title is obviously a possibility as well.
Yeah.
But I would not install them as a favorite. Maybe not even the second favorite. I think maybe picking them second in the conference might be a little bit ambitious, considering they have to replace what they have to replace.
Right, and other teams are making their jumps.
Right, and so in a different conference, I don't think this is necessarily a slight on Michigan is what I'm trying to get to.
Right.
You know, there is a little bit of a step back having to replace your top line, especially with the, you know, the arms race that the conference is becoming. So.
And that's really funny because a few years ago we were talking about how terrible the Big Ten was, how it wasn't even fun anymore because you were just playing bad hockey. Now teams like Ohio State, Michigan State have started to take their programs more seriously. Yep. Adding Notre Dame I think was huge. Mm-hmm. Penn State is getting the most out of what they can. Mm-hmm. And Wisconsin made a good hire. So we looked at like Minnesota Duluth as a really good example of this where they don't run away with their conference and they don't even always finish in the top two or three, but they're a good program that plays in a tough conference, mm-hmm. and they still make the tournament, and they still make runs. So you don't have to win all your games right. in your conference mm-hmm. when you're in a really good conference. And that's mm-hmm. what it looks like Michigan is. So will they win the conference? I don't know. I mean, it looks like it's going to be really tough. But it does seem like they have the potential to be a tournament team.
100%, yes. And so, as I was saying a little bit ago, not winning the conference I don't think is necessarily a slight on them.
Right.
I think it's more of a compliment to how strong the conference would be. For making the tournament, I mean, they finished eighth last year.
Mm-hmm.
They're picked fourth right now in the preseason poll, which I'm not...
It seems a little ambitious.
It's a little ambitious. I don't know if any team in history who's replaced their entire top line is gonna jump that far. Because, you know, honestly, the distance from four to eight is quite vast.
Yes, as we found out last year.
You're getting into elite territory.
Yeah.
I don't think Michigan is an elite college hockey team this year, despite the fact they might have one of the best players. They are going to have one of the better defenses.
Right.
They are going to have probably a top five player in Quinn Hughes.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of questions on offense to make me want to bet on them finishing in a one seed territory, maybe even two seed.
Yeah, that seems a little.
That
high.
Doesn't preclude them from making the tournament, though. I definitely think they can make the tournament. And honestly, we found if you look at the way college hockey is trending, you don't necessarily have to have an overabundance of talent to win in college hockey. You have to have great goaltending, a good system, and a very disciplined approach to that. And Michigan is developing that. So yep. especially with the strong defense they have, I definitely think they can get into the tournament and win four games. You know, it's not a shoo-in, so to speak.
No.
Now, I will say, from a positive standpoint, like I said, they have Quinn Hughes. You can't overstate that.
Yep.
And they also, like I said, the experienced defense. And they are kind of strong down the middle, as we reviewed earlier. From a negative standpoint, they have very little depth right now. Yeah. So with the coaching transition and some of the
especially scoring depth.
Yeah, some of the recruiting difficulties they've had. And honest, quite frankly, this might be their year if they're going to do something, because next year their defense is basically all leaving.
Yeah.
So, you know, this might be a good year to make a move. But there is, you know, to what I was saying just a second ago, there is going to be very little margin for error. So if, for example, one of the top line players gets hurt, or Quinn Hughes is not, you know, the Quinn Hughes that we expect for whatever reason, we could be looking at a very difficult season.
Yeah. Yes,
but you know, with I think with what Mel Pearson has done is trying to mitigate some of those things by bringing in so many experienced players to kind of fill out that freshman class. He is hedging quite a bit, and I think that's a very intelligent approach for the way the team is being built at this current moment. And I do think that, you know, as much as they are going to have a difficulty withstanding an injury to, say, a Lockwood, if Lockwood gets hurt again, or if Norris goes down, or Hughes, they're doing as much as they possibly can. You know, they did have quite unfortunate recruiting results with the defenseman they were recruiting, with Samuelson, with Wild.
Right.
You know, in Regula. So, but, you know, overall they've been able to kind of mitigate that as best they can. And I think that it bodes well for the season. You know, if they're able to maintain a solid luck with injuries, I do think that this is absolutely a tournament team.
So it might be a little different Michigan hockey than we've been used mm-hmm. to in the last few years, whereas you might not be scoring 6-7 goals as much as like what we've been accustomed to, but they do have a lot on the back end. They do return a lot of experience in net, and there are still some pieces to grow on offense, so it's not completely shutting down the offense, but probably looking as more of a defensive team this year, and that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Well, so I think you have to have the right coach for their approach on offense, so it's going to be by committee a little bit, and Mel Pearson has demonstrated that he's capable of doing this. Not every coach can. Some coaches would flail wildly and not do very well, frankly.
Okay, sure.
I think that they have the right coach for this kind of approach, and I think that it's something that's definitely that can definitely work, you know, and they're going to have you know, he's bringing in a lot of guys, trying to build a strong fourth line. They do have enough pieces. If the freshmen turn out okay, you know, if Morgan turns out okay, there will be enough there to kind of do it by committee. They are absolutely 100% going to need to see an increase in special teams performance.
Yeah.
Especially from the penalty kill. They are
you can't have that
figured out.
No, you can't be bottom five in penalty kill the way they have been.
No. I mean, to the point where it's we're all gripping our seats every time they take a penalty.
Oh my gosh. Especially in those tournament games. You just
if there was one complaint, it would be that. They're going to definitely have to address that and get better. And, you know, I think he's capable. I think they're capable of it, you know. And I do think that I think that there are some pieces here for another good season. I think that, like I said, there's a little bit less margin for error. But at the same time, they still have Quinn Hughes. They still have Quinn Hughes, which is great. And we should all enjoy that. But, you know, in college hockey, it's get in the tournament and win four games.
Yep.
And
we've been on the other end of that.
100%. And, so. You know, I think that the way college hockey is trending, Michigan, you know, some of the things we said that, you know, they've taken a step back in a little bit from overall talent level, perhaps, or, you know, like I said, the lack of depth. That's not necessarily going to crush them in this college hockey landscape right now. I think that with good coaching and strong defense and a commitment to a good system, you know, they can have a lot of success. And I'm not saying they're going to win every game -1-0.
Sure.
Right? Like, I still think that they can score. They're going to be able to score. And it's, I think what it's going to take some creativity from the coaching staff. And I think they have that creativity, quite frankly. I think that they're going to do some really good line matching. The same way you saw last year with Norris.
Yeah.
They will figure it out.
They'll figure a couple things out, 100%. Like you said, in that way. But the strengths of this team clearly lie on the blue line.
Definitely.
And to whatever extent in net as well. Mm-hmm. So when you're as a place to start, when you haven't seen a lot of it yet, that's kind of what we're assuming. Mm-hmm. And you also think with a guy like Mel, with some of these guys that are in the mix of that have been drafted and are still growing, there is an upside for some goals too.
But, oh, definitely.
But but definitely expecting him to be pretty solid in the back end.
And looking at the schedule as we just reviewed it, I'm very high on, you know, the opportunity for a lot of growth early in the season.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there were some growing pains last year. And I do think that their big boost, their big coaching bump came last year, not second year, like some coaches will see.
Okay.
I think we've already experienced that. But I think the way their schedule sets up, it gives them a little bit of time, does give them some margin for error, figuring out the freshmen, figuring out, you know, getting that first line settled, getting the roles defined.
Yeah.
And I think that we'll look back and be happy that, you know, the schedule set up the way it was before we get into the Big Ten.
So that's our preview. We've discussed most of the players on this roster, if not all of them, and where we think that they will be. We will try to be back in a few weeks, maybe a month or two, depending on how some schedules work out, and see where Michigan's at after their non-conference. They'll be entering some Big Ten play, which we discussed should be, if nothing else, some good hockey. And if things go decently well, I mean, we could see another nice run this year.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to it. And I think, like I said, if anything to take away from the season is the Big Ten is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And Quinn Hughes.
And hopefully we'll have some fun talking about it as well.
Yes. Thank you for listening to the MGO HockeyCast. I am Anthony Ciotti with David Nasternak. Please enjoy Quinn Hughes.